DJ, bring that back.
When I move to the moon.
Just like that.
When I move to the moon.
Just like that.
When I move to the moon.
Just like that.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Coach's Box, and my name is Monty, and the next voice you're going to hear is Molly, and we are both Hawthorn supporters, so we're going to be very pleased with ourselves this week because we had a massive 12-goal victory over a very tough opposition, didn't we, Molly?
Percentage is the word, percentage grazing.
Yes, there were a few non-competitive games this week, and obviously the Hawks-Giants game was one of them, but anyway... We'll say the round review for a little bit, but we'll spend the first probably 5 minutes of the show talking about a big news story that broke. I think it was yesterday, wasn't it, Molly? About the Herald Sun had a briefing for bloggers, for which of course I was not invited. Neither were you, surprisingly, because you usually get an invite to these things. Was it called the Herald Sun Future of Journalism? I think it was called.
Don't know whether Herald Sun's real happy with me.
Yes.
You tend to bag them quite a lot.
I think the word is troll. You tend to troll them a little bit.
Wow,
just a little
that's
bit.
A word.
Yes, that's a word, yes. You put words together in sentences. That's called language. Yes. Anyway, so...
like the sentences?
I think it was Josh Rowe who was the first to tweet out that they mentioned... not just mentioned fantasy football. It almost formed pretty much the three main building blocks of the Herald Sun's new paywall, which is going up on Monday. Which is of course a public holiday in Melbourne. So I'm not quite sure how that works. But anyway, one of the big selling points, the what do they call it? Something.
Pillars, was
no,
it?
No, well, yeah, pillars, yes. I think the unique selling points is what they call it, yes. USPs, is live Supercoach scores. And apparently they have what they've claimed to all and sundry is the best live thing of stuff.
Second screen,
yes, that's what they call it, yes. So, I mean...
Which we all know, everyone here knows, is incorrect.
Yes, well, I'm not going to blow my own trumpet because that's what Molly's here for, to blow my trumpet. Yes. I'm not here to get into an argument about who's going to be a better site and all that sort of stuff as far as fans footy goes. That'll happen in the marketplace. But we do need to talk about first of all. What a good result this is for fantasy coaches, Molly. Because we've been denied live Supercoach scores for a couple of years now, if not more. And the first thing that all of us need to say, myself included, is that it's great that fans will actually be able to get it again, even though they have to pay for it.
Yes, bravo. Yeah, no, it's good. I think the entry level was $2.95.
$2.95 per week, I think it was. Week, yes.
Which, to my understanding, someone wrote on one of the bloggers wrote that was what it was going to cost to play Supercoach. But I think it's only to get access to the extra content.
I think that's actually everything.
It's not like you need to pay it to be able to play Supercoach. It's just to get to all the extra content than the live scores and the like. And as Monty says, that's across the whole Herald Sun side and all the extra features and bells and whistles they're going to add.
Yeah, so unfortunately, it's not going to be the case where you can pay. Fantasy coaches would like it if you could pay 50 cents a week just for the Supercoach scores and forget about the rest. You know what they call a la carte. Productization of these sort of features. Unfortunately, that's obviously not going to be possible. Well, so. Yeah, sorry, you were going to say?
Well, as you said, they see it as one of the big selling points. So yep. Get you in on the Supercoach, sell you on the rest.
Yes, and apparently crime reporting is...
Crime.
Yeah. But didn't they used to have John Sylvester down there, and he got poached away to the Age, and he's pretty much the premier crime reporter, so I don't know quite how that works. But anyway, so yes, obviously the question that some will be asking is what I'm going to do about that, because of course...
Hey, Monty.
Yes?
What are you going to do about it?
Yeah, all right, well, I mean, it's something which, I mean, it sort of caught me a bit off guard because I hadn't heard about this, and I sort of said at the time, you know, no comment from me on this because I needed to go away and think about it for a bit. Just a background for people who don't have no idea what I'm talking about. So my site, FanFooty, has in the past run live Supercoach scores when they have been published elsewhere. And this has caused, obviously, a bit of angst in certain quarters. And I'm sure that whatever it is that I'm going to do is probably going to cause angst in those certain quarters once again. But my thinking on this is that I don't necessarily think that FanFooty needs live Supercoach scores. I would be happy with a situation where perhaps... Well, I don't know what the Herald Sun's going to do, whether they are, as they did last year, going to post quarterly updates on their non-paid site, as they did last year. I would be happy with reposting that on FanFooty. I don't necessarily need to have live Supercoach scores on my site. I'd be quite happy for them to be able to claim we are the only ones to have live Supercoach scores. I don't want to step on that. So I would be happy with that as a compromise. It's not as if I have a huge bargaining position here, but after thinking about it, I would hope that would satisfy all parties. Now, it may not. I might get called into New Zealand at headquarters for a nice little chat over a cup of tea, but I'm hoping, I think, I hope that the accommodation of publishing just, you know, post-quarter scores and leaving them to have the live scores is a good compromise that hopefully everyone will not necessarily like, but be able to live with.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think that's okay. And so, technically, could you do the scores round one if you got...
Well, I haven't seen the system, so I don't know. But, yeah, whether it's able to be done technically and whether I want to do... exactly how much of it I want to do technically is another matter. I mean, these things are, it's not as if I'm actually hacking anything. I want to make that clear, which obviously the principals know, but, you know, I just wanted to underline that. But anyway, so, yes, this is... I mean, look, I'm not sure about the rest of the industry. I mean, not that there's actually a whole lot of other sites that do live scores at the moment. I think Dreamstats still there, but I think FFC, of a Fantasy Footy Club, have dropped theirs. So,
did you Sirius do it for a while?
They might have, but I can't remember them doing it. I don't think they... Now, you're gonna make me go to 2Series to see whether they do, because I'm not sure they do.
Anyway.
But yes, now I'm going to look that up as we podcast. They are, okay. Well, I lied. All right. Yes, all right. Well, there's still going to be options. I can't speak on behalf of Dreamstats and 2Series, obviously, for obvious reasons. But yes, that'll be my policy anyway, so we'll see how that plays out, but I'm sure I'll speak to New Zealand people and we'll see how that goes. But I'm not interested in completely undermining their business model, because I have, you know, one thing I should say, I have the utmost respect for Rupert Murdoch and the New Zealand organisation for trying the paywall. It may not work. There's obviously, you know, different perspectives on whether it's all completely a waste of time. Some people say that. I'm not necessarily in that boat. I do think they're pushing the proverbial uphill, but I respect Murdoch and the New Zealand organisation for at least trying to fund journalism into the future, even if it's even if it turns out to be a pointless exercise. So I don't want to be the one who's going to kill the possibility of that. So anyway,
no, I think I think you're right. I think after the round scores is the quarter scores is fine. I mean, I guess in my point to sort of add to it, I'm not the biggest Supercoach player anyway. Yeah. It wouldn't worry me. If the only reason I was going to pay the $2.95 was for Supercoach, I wouldn't.
Mm.
So, you know, even if they put the whole Supercoach system behind the paywall, I'd just stop playing Supercoach.
It is going to be interesting to see how many subscriptions they get. I think Josh Rowe was predicting 50% of their current circulation. I don't think that's going to be anywhere near where they get. 10% would be probably about more the range of it. But I mean, 10% of their current circulation is still, you know, many tens of thousands. And if they're paying $2.95 a week, then that adds up to some decent coin. But I mean, whether it'll continue to fund the multifarious activities of News Corporation and the Herald Sun in particular is another question for Rupert and Lachlan and James and Elizabeth and all the various underlings underneath them. But anyway, enough about that. Well, we're here to talk fantasy football. So we should get on to the round review. And, of course, that starts with the Gold Coast Geelong game on the Friday night. Molly, now, of course, there has been a fair bit of talk about the move of Nathan Bock into the forward line. Now, I suppose we should talk about that first, because like with Drew Petrie last year, I think it was actually even the winner of Dream Team, or was it Supercoach? I think it was actually the winner of Supercoach last year who had Drew Petrie in his side, despite the fact that North had a bye, I think it was in round two, and Petrie himself was suspended for round one because of the, obviously, the ruck cover that he provided last year. Can you see people getting in Nathan Bock into their back line, even though he is suspended for the first two rounds because, of course, the betting scandal from last year?
I don't know that they will. I mean, in times past, Bock being forward has been worse for his scoring. And with the Gold Coast, you'd have to think the same is probably going to be true, that you'd be more likely to have him in your side if he was to play back, and because the ball would spend more time in that area. So, well, I think for the Suns' development, it could be a really good move to have Bock forward. I'm not sure it's good for the fantasy side of his scoring. It's for him to do better in the forward line.
I think in a real AFL match, there's going to be a lot more third men up. I think that, maybe I'm impugning the reputation of AFL players here, but I think that Matt Maguire, Jonathan Brown incident might have scared a lot of clubs off doing third man up, especially in the pre-season, even in the NAB Cup. So I would expect a lot more third man up contests to sort of be two-on-ones against Nathan Bock in the regular season. So that's certainly something that's going to affect his scoring. But I think actually the more interesting fantasy relevant move of that is not only Bock going forward, but Brennan playing centre half back, which he has played in the NAB Cup, and he did of course against I think it was Brown, Mitch Brown on the weekend. I like him at centre half back. I think he's got a huge potential to score there. Perhaps more of a super coach play because, of course, he is a pretty good intercept mark, and I like the prospect of him doing that at centre half back. I think he could actually be obviously he played midfield last year. I think specifically with super coach, I like his prospects for increasing his scoring next year, Molly.
Yeah, I think there's a chance of that. I guess from the super coach point of view, there could be a worry he can be a bit of a lark, meaning a few turnovers here and there could be costly. But as I just said in box defence, you know, it's a chance that he can score well in that position. I guess the problem is he's designated as a midfielder in DT and super coach, so he's got to break even at 84. He has to really get that up to 100. I'm not sure he can do that in the back line.
I was looking at the advanced stats on the AFL website, and I was surprised and pleased to see that in the 1%er column, Jared Brennan had 15 1%ers, which is an amazingly large amount of 1%ers. I mean, Warnock also had 13 1%. Now, I presume a lot of this is spoils, but spoils, I mean, if 15 1%ers, those all add up in your Supercoach score. And he had not only 8 rebound 50s, but also 4 inside 50s. So all these exotic stats, and you add to that 6 tackles, you know, he got 96 in Dream Team, but I'd imagine his Supercoach score would be a whole lot bigger than that. So I really do like him as a Supercoach special this year. Moving on to the rest of the Gold Coast team, Molly. We should make mention, even though we talked about them last time they played, Liam Patrick and Zach Smith. Do you believe the move of Liam Patrick into the back line as a small defender? He looked a bit like, although this is again maybe speaking ill of him, he looked a little bit like Nathan Cracker back there. That sort of player, obviously the same sort of build. And he did a few nice things as a small defender. I'm not sure he's a lockdown, but as a rebounding small defender, he did a pretty good job. And also Zach Smith got some nice numbers. So I mean, does that redeem him? I mean, I think we both agreed Patrick's a bit of a streaky player as a forward, but would you like him as a back as well?
Yeah, I liked him a little bit better in the back. I hadn't seen a lot of him, and for some reason, I think it was because of he's related to Liam Jarrell. I thought he was a much taller player.
Hmm.
So, I liked him a lot better this week when I saw him. He got subbed out, so didn't play a whole game and scored 49, so that's all right. But yeah, I mean, I think there's some, he's priced at a price that could make him someone you look at. And yeah, so I think Patrick definitely is one to put on the watch list, but just a matter of, is there other players around? He is priced a little higher than a lot of the other players at 173, so of the rookie price players anyway. So I think there's going to be some options for rookie price players, and it's going to depend on your strategies.
I think one thing we should mention, obviously Zach Smith played last year and Patrick played a few games last year as well, but they still are young players, and you can't look at their numbers from one half. I mean, they did score about 50-odd. You can't just multiply that by two, because these are young players. They will fall away over the course of a full game.
I think the other thing to be concerned about with someone like Zach Smith too is, I think they said it on the coverage, the Fox coverage, that McKenna had said that last year he overplayed Zach Smith.
Mm.
So whether that means he'll not overplay other rookies on the Gold Coast side this year, or whether he still will take it a little bit easier on Zach Smith, it's going to be something to be concerned about, in my opinion.
I think we'll see a fair bit more of Gringe this year. That'd be my prediction. All right, on the Geelong side, the very interesting set of young players who are very nicely priced, who are, of course, vying for a couple of positions in the midfield and back line, which have been vacated by Cameron Ling and, of course, Darren Milburn. Now, before the season started, I would have thought Taylor Hunt would be the replacement for Milburn. And I mean, and you were telling me last time Geelong played that Simon Hogan is the ready-made replacement for Ling. But, of course, we've had Cameron Guthrie bob his head up this week, and, of course, the previous week. I think he's certainly competing for both of those spots, and I can't see that Hunt or Hogan are necessarily ahead of Guthrie. I mean, I think I went on the Cat's Claw website, and I saw one fan 22, round 20, because, of course, this is the point of the season where a lot of fans are posting their round 122 sides. I saw one with Guthrie on a half-back flank, the Milburn position. So, I mean, I know there are other sides which have got Hunt there, and still other sides, some of them have Hogan, some of them don't. I mean, you can obviously treat fan sides with the respect that you might want to give them, but Guthrie seems to be high up, if not higher, than Hunt for that Milburn position, and if not, he might even take the Hogan position. So I think I'm not sure there's three positions for all those three players to get in the side. And even if Guthrie and Hunt play early, of course you've got David Wojcinski coming back into that side, who you would think would be would slot back into that other halfback flank, of course, with Josh Hunt or Andrew Mackey on the other one. So I mean, job security for all three of these players is dodgy. But they're obviously high scorers, and perhaps Hunt, Hunt's something at about 270. But the other two, very, very cheaply priced, and very tempting for me.
Yeah, absolutely. I've gone on record as I'm a Hogan fan, so I've liked what he's done all the games I've seen him play so far. A little bit of turnovers, but not too bad. finds the ball forward, which is good. Yeah, and Hunt and Guthrie, Guthrie really impressed me what I saw of him on Friday night. I believe he was the player the Hawks tried to steal away, and you can sort of see why they tried to do that. And, I mean, even Hunt's very impressive as well. So I think in the past we've been worried about these rookies at sides like Geelong and Collingwood where their sides are pretty well made up. But inevitably there's injuries in these top sides. They try and rest their older players and make sure they get through the whole season. So I think there is a chance these guys could play a lot of games as long as their form holds up.
I'm certainly going to be going into 2012 with at least one of these guys in my side, if not two. Perhaps not Hunt, but I could certainly see people who are sort of a bit iffy about Brian Lake, maybe, because, I mean, Hunt's about 15K more expensive than Lake. I could certainly see people looking at Hunt and thinking, well, you know, this is Geelong we're talking about. They still share the ball about like they did in the old days, and Hunt's going to get a heap of it. So yeah, I could certainly see cases for all three, all cases for and against all three of those guys. But I think at the moment, I mean, we'll talk about Marty Clark later, but I ditched Marty Clark out of my side this week and put Guthrie in, and it just makes my side, I feel a whole lot better with my side with Guthrie over Clark. So that's just my opinion, and I'm sure it'll probably change next week if Clark gets an 80 and Guthrie, you know, gets subbed in the first half for 40. So yes, this is what the NAB Cup's for, the stocks rise and fall. All right, on to Hawk Talk, Molly. Obviously, the Hawk Giant game. Now, I think it was actually the Freako who might have mentioned. Was it the Freako? I saw someone mentioning today. Jared Bowman is a chance apparently from round one, with Stephen Gillam still recuperating from his injury from last year. So, what can you tell us about the prospect? First of all, is this true? And if so, how long do you reckon Gillam will be out for? So what's the job security of a Bowman like?
It's going to be really tricky in that back line for the Hawks with Stratton and Gibson locked in, probably Guerra and Burchill locked in.
And Suckling?
Well,
Suckling, maybe. Suckling and or Burgoyne, you would have thought, in that back line.
Correct. I would say, one of those two. And then there would be one more tall spot. So is that Schoenmakers? Will Gillam get up? Who, you know, word is he's competing in training and the like. So not too far away. I think they'd like to get a game into him in the NAB Cup, or he'll probably start at VFL level. And then there's, you know, the fans' whipping boy Thomas Murphy as well, who, you know, a lot of fans talk about his non-attacking, but forget to mention that, you know, he's a very good lockdown defender on the small and medium forwards.
Mm.
So I can't see a spot there for Bowman as impressive as in many ways he was. You know, he got outmarked a few times by Izzy Folau, but you know, they were good marks that he was taking, and Bowman was right there. So, you know, I was impressed with his closing ability, and his leap was pretty good in the spoil. So, yeah, I think he's a chance to play some games this year, but whether I don't know whether I would be confident with him in a fantasy sense.
Yeah, so I can't help but think when you're talking there about Thomas Murphy, he's actually the complete opposite type of backman to Bob Murphy, strangely enough. He's got skills in all the places that Bob Murphy hasn't, and vice versa. Yeah, it's strange, that one.
Doesn't have the friends on the All-Australian committee that Bob Murphy has.
No, and I think, but I mean, you know, I'm a critic of Tom Murphy, but I don't think he would have allowed Eddie Betts to kick three goals with three kicks in the first quarter, as obviously Bob Murphy did on the weekend.
That's an All-Australian type backman.
Indeed. Well, not all of them can be lockdown players. I mean, they don't have, didn't have. Anyway, we'll talk about the Dogs later, but all right, just to round off Hawk Talk for this week, Molly. I know you've got one of these players in your side, but I wanted to talk about Matt Suckling, who, of course, you banned me from having last year, much to my detriment. So I'm blaming you for.
You can have him this year.
Can I?
Yes, you can.
Yes, because I think we talked in the pre-show about Birchall, of course. Grant Birchall, the other of those two. I feel like fantasy coaches are actually, I mean, a lot of them, perhaps you're obviously yourself excluded from this, a lot of them are sort of bypassing both Suckling and Birchall because they're just a little bit below what you would expect out of the top three. And I think if I'm gauging the opinion of the masses about on this one, it does seem like there's going to be a lot of mid-prices, if not rookies, started in the backs this year. So you probably can only justify two, maybe three premium backs, and if you're going to go premiums, you're probably going to be going Goddard, Shaw, and who else am I thinking of? Enright,
Scotland,
Carrazzo, obviously. You know, you're going to be going for the absolute. You know, you're going to be shooting for the top three, and of course, yep. While Birchall and Suckling might end up being top seven, I think top three might be beyond them. So, do you think the coaches are missing out on not in that sense? And now, is your Birchall pick just a bit of a homer pick, or do you see something that perhaps a lot of coaches don't see in terms of point improvement?
Right. I don't know that I see a great deal of point improvement, but I thought he could hold his position, which is around the Goddard and Shaw level. I like Scotland a lot, but I was just a bit nervous of, and maybe I'm wrong, it might be just a perception thing that he's getting to the older stage of his career.
Yeah, I believe he'll pass 30 this year, or if he's not already, he will pass 30 this year.
Right, so, you know, I wouldn't heap criticism on anyone who picks Scotland, but just in my own mind, I'm a bit nervous about him holding up that high score, whether teams are going to no longer give him that space that he's got or the likes, or, you know, it's just one of those gut feels where you're like, he's a high price, he's, you know, a break even of 100, which he's got every likelihood that he could make, but I've just got a few nagging question marks, and I think Birchall's just hitting the peak of his career now, so that's why I've gone for Birchall over one of those guys at present.
Now, I suppose the other possible justification for picking him this year in terms of a point improvement point of view is that last year he was called upon a fair bit to play against genuine key position players, and not only the third talls, your second talls, and sometimes even first talls. So presumably with Stratton back now and Gillan back in the not too distant future, and if he doesn't play, then Bowman would play, or presumably Birchall would be released theoretically to zone up the ground and be more damaging by hand and foot. So that's one possible justification I could see for getting him. But you say I can have Suckling this year. Is that because you're worried about his job security? I mean, I can't necessarily see how when he averaged 90 in DT. I mean, I know this is obviously DT scores do not guarantee your spot, but he got so much of the ball last year, and I don't think his disposal was all that bad. I think it was pretty good.
No, his disposal was great.
But what about his job? Why do Hawk fans assume that he's going to be fighting with Burgoyne for a spot when he was so damaging last year?
Well, I'm nervous of his defensive ability compared to some of the other guys who, you know, all those guys have got a fair amount of ball use apart from Murphy who you know, is adequate but not as good as the others. I can see Suckling playing more of a half-forward role a bit this year that is seen in the preseason and a little bit towards the end last year come finals, because in the finals, he was the sub for quite a few games once Stratton came back.
Mm.
I just think he gets pushed out slightly. Like, as I say, he's going to get games because there's going to be injuries and the likes. And, you know, on the Hawthorn boards and the likes, there is a lot of debate about what the best back six for the Hawks are. Some people, I've seen some sides where people are suggesting that Gibson can play more as the smaller player and go with Gillam and Schoenmakers and Stratton and Gibson in the back line. Myself, I think that's a little bit too tall, but I think there's a lot of competitiveness for those back spots, and And I'm not sure about Suckling holding on to that spot all year at the price. I mean, if he was at that mid price again, you'd jump all over him. But at the high price of, you know, of a 90 average, it's just too risky for a fantasy sense, in my opinion.
So you would see him moving to the half forward flank. I mean, does that mean that he starts fighting with Whitecross for a spot?
Yeah, I think he is. He's sort of, you know, the idea that using his skills to deliver to the forwards more by getting him up the ground and, you know, shoot a goal, although he's one of those guys that, you know, I don't want to see shooting for goal because his goal kicking isn't as good as his field kicking, in my opinion.
Mm. So the front six in the four. I mean, we were talking about the back six, but the forward six. Obviously, you'd have Buddy and Hale and Gunston as the three talls, and you'd have Puopolo and Rioli, and then there's the third one, which is the high half forward. And what you're saying to me is that it's between Suckling and we're not even talking about Lewis there, of course.
Yeah, Whitecross, Osborne.
Osborne.
So, I mean, in many ways, this is the argument that I think Champion Data made, that the Hawks are pretty loaded. So, you know, that you can see, I can see a lot of good players, we think are good players, who will miss out on spots in that side this year.
Mm. All right.
You know, Smith as well.
Well, that's enough Hawk talk for this week. I think most of the media outlets this week have been talking us up for the flag, so
talking us up for the wooden spoon.
That's right. No, ninth. We're going to get the north position of ninth. Yeah, they were shooting for ninth.
Richmond.
No. Well, North has finished ninth the last 2 years.
Oh, okay. Yes.
All right. We'll get onto the GWS.
Another side on Saturday?
There was another side.
What those different jumpers were.
They weren't very different though. I mean, orange and grey is not all that different to golden. We weren't wearing golden brown either. But anyway, Devin Smith is obviously the big name to come out of this. Topped the numbers for the Giants. And this is not the first time he's topped the numbers for the Giants. There was apparently an intra-club game before the NAB Cup started where he also starred, which tells me that he excels at games where there's not a whole lot of contests. Maybe I'm being a bit uncharitable towards him, but there wasn't a whole lot of body contact there after the first quarter or so. I think that there was a bit of a training drill for most of that game, and that tells me that Smith is an accumulator, and he does well in games where the pressures are off. I probably need to watch a bit more film to really make that the accusation stick, because it's a pretty poor damning accusation of his game. But it's something certainly I'll be looking for to see whether that feel of mine is correct. But I suppose when we're talking about the Giants this year, Molly, there's going to be a lot of those kind of games. I mean, there were a fair few of those last year with the Suns, and it's probably going to be even worse this year. There are going to be games where the Giants are just going to get smashed like they did against the Hawks, and it's just going to be non-competitive for whole halves at a time, and players like Smith might be the ones who benefit out of that. So, I mean, I like Smith as a number 7 forward. He's certainly in that spot in my team at the moment. So I mean, look, I like him as a starter. I mean, obviously, being the sort of player he is, he's not going to be scoring the hundreds every week. But I think when you average it out, I like him in what I think is a pretty poor set of forward rookies. I like him as the best starter amongst those. What do you think, Molly?
Yeah, no, I think I didn't sort of notice him so much. I was watching somewhere where the sound was down, so I couldn't pick up all the players. But yeah, I mean, he's put up a good score in this round of the NAB, and you know, had some shots for goal, lots of kicks, some marks, tackles, all the sort of things you want to see out of a player. So that's got to be a positive for him and put him on the radar. Good price, forward, midfield. Eligibility, you know, even you could think if you want to have a link there to the midfield of putting him on your midfield bench. So a couple of options there, really.
Yep. I'll just mention in passing, he's not on the running sheet, but Jeremy Cameron obviously put in a nice number, but I'd distrust that number because your boy Molly Bootsy Ryan Schoenmakers played so wide of him. It was hard to, you know. I mean, I think in a real AFL game, the centre half back's going to lock down on a centre half forward a lot more than what Schoenmakers.
Yeah, he didn't really damage.
No.
With any of his things.
But yeah,
one shot for goal.
But the player I did want to ask about was Will Hoskin-Elliott, because he impressed me, and he was in my side for summer this week, but just at that price of 166 in Dream Team, you know, I just want to. I mean, I traded him in for Lachie Neale, and I've gone back on my trade there, because that extra, you know, 70 odd grand going back down from Hoskin-Elliott to Neale, it's just too tempting. I mean, Hoskin-Elliott looks to me like a quality player. I might actually even pick him up in Supercoach, because I think he's one of those ones who is more of a quality disposal than an accumulator. But I like the look of him, and he looks like a sort of a proto Ryan O'Keefe type to me, without obviously the accumulation skills that O'Keefe has now. But I think Hoskin-Elliott is quality, but I just, yeah, just that extra price he has because of the high draft pick he gathered. I'm not sure I can start both Coniglio and Hoskin-Elliott in the one side. It's just too much.
Yeah. No, I agree. I mean, if you want to look at positives, 13 kicks, 7 marks, no handball. So at least he knows how to play the fantasy game. Forget those silly handballs. Just go for the kick.
Hmm. All right. Well, we'll move on to the. I just realised the video chat update was off. I was wondering why the chat wasn't working, but that's my fault. My apologies. All right. So we'll move on to the some of the games that neither of us saw, Molly. Of course, one of those being the Sydney North Melbourne game. It was a pain. It was a big pain in the proverbial to try and cover these games, because the stupid rules for, you know, 7 subs from one half to the next just drove me batty. But anyway, with that Sydney North Melbourne game, I think the on both sides the storyline to me was about the ruck situation on both sides. There was actually a story in the Sydney Morning Herald during the week, might have even been on the weekend, about Shane Mumford, quoting him as saying he would play a bit more forward this year. So those of us who are wondering, you know, how the Swans are going to handle Mark Seeby, who continues to rack up good numbers when he's given the number one ruck role. I mean, he's that is apparently, if you believe the words out of his mouth, that is going to be the way that it's going to work out this year, is that he's going to play more forward, which makes me wonder. Last year, of course, you had Jesse White pinching in the ruck and Lewis Roberts-Thompson doing the same. I'm wondering how that forward line is going to work now with... does that mean that Jesse White doesn't get a game? Does it mean LRT doesn't get a game? I mean, if they're going to have Mark Seeby come in there, what's the situation going to be? Are we going to have one of those talls come off the subs bench? How's that going to work? I'm not sure how the structure works with Seeby injected and someone going out. I mean, tell me, Molly, what's the situation going to be with that tall forward line with obviously Sam Reed and we're not even talking about Mike Pike, who's done nothing wrong. So there's just too many Chiefs and not enough too many Indians in that Swan side, Molly.
Yeah, no, very true. And I mean, I think it is bad news for White, who's never really blown the house down. Apart from one year, he had a pretty good run for a little bit, but yeah, I think it's really bad news for him. He's the one I would see as likely to be out of the side first of all. And that's before I'm wondering, just listening to you talk about it and think about how tall that forward line is, the one thing going through my mind is, what is that going to mean for Goods, which might be a more fantasy relevant. Apart from, you know, if Mumford plays forward, maybe he's not as fantasy relevant as he had been in the past. But will the idea that the forward line is going to be tall without Goods mean that he's going to play more time on the ball this year, which would be, I think, a good thing for his fantasy score, would it not?
Absolutely. It's going to be Well, this is a lot of these questions hopefully will be answered this week, but when apparently a lot of coaches, I'm not sure we trust all of them about this, but a lot of the coaches are saying we're going to be playing a round one side this week. So well, hopefully a lot of those questions will be answered this week.
Well, the freak on Twitter went on the record as saying if the rookies aren't in this week, forget them.
I did see that, and I think you mentioned Luke Brown from the Adelaide side not being there, so there's certainly a few of those. But I think, I mean, let's face it, there was, I think it's about, the average was about somewhere between 17 and 20 last year, in terms of rookies who are playing round one, and I think that's probably going to be even more this year, obviously, with the Suns coming in, so an extra team. So I think, yeah, I think that's a bit overstated. They're probably going to play their senior players this week. I mean, I think Geelong's certainly doing that, but I think that's a bit overstated. And we're going to see a few surprise rookies in the selection for round one, as we always do. All right, on the North side of that game, Molly, Hamish McIntosh put in another big set of numbers, and we talked about him last week, but The better McIntosh plays, is it all possible to make a case for Todd Goldstein, or is he completely crossed off of all fantasy relevance this year?
I mean, it might be a little bit like the Swans. I mean, the fact that there's that competing rucks isn't necessarily going to make you want to pick either one of them anymore. It's going to make you want to pick them less. So, it is a worry. McIntosh is the interesting one, being at a lower price that, you know, maybe you can get away with having him. Not as risky a pick as the other guys, but yeah, I mean, it's making me turn away from him. I mean, I think in my side at the moment, I think I've got Leuenberger in there and, you know, I think that's looking better and better all the time over, you know, Mumford, who was someone I considered, and, Goldstein, who I considered.
We'll talk about Leuenberger later. He had a terrible... Anyway, as I said, we'll talk about him later. But yes, I think Goldstein is... There's some issues down there at North. On AFL 360 tonight, I don't want to... You don't see the normal Fox Footy programs, do you?
I didn't catch them tonight because of...
Because they have a coaching pressure index. And they put Brad Scott at normal... I was flabbergasted at. I think Brad Scott's almost, you know, first for the chop this year if North don't do well. I mean, two ninths in a row, if he's going to finish ninth again, I don't think that's good enough. But anyway.
Yes, they don't normally reward consistency, do they, in that way?
in that way, no. No. All right, we'll get on to the West.
Can I just add one thing there that I was just, if I can remember what it was. There's something hit me in the head. Do you think the uncertainty of some of these rucks, like Mumford, like Goldstein, is even more pushing towards the Giles as your second ruck option?
I think the problem with Giles as your second ruck is, what if something goes wrong? Because it's going to mean a double trade. Because if you've got, say, Giles and Stevenson and Redden, for instance, or even Rowe, obviously with Rowe you probably wouldn't have a forward ruck in your forwards, because there's just bugger all of them. So yes, I don't think there's going to be. If Giles ends up scoring 50s, and if Stevenson ends up scoring 50s, or even 40s, and the same for Redden, he might not even play. What if one of them gets injured, and then you've got a guy scoring 50s in your rucks or 40s? Because I mean, you know, a ruck can, I mean, more than any other player, a ruckman can put in 30s and 40s in consecutive weeks. They are capable of doing that. So,
yeah.
I'm just thinking of the downside. I mean, I'm thinking conservatively there. My strategy has almost always been to do two premium rucks. Forget about the rucks. You do not want to have to trade in the rucks. And apart from anything else, we know that Stevenson and Giles are going to earn money. We're not entirely sure about all the other rookies in the other positions. So at least you know that there's going to be a backup there of a cash generator that you are going to be able to upgrade later. So I think, yeah. Sorry, go on.
I mean, isn't that a step to go the Giles as a second ruck? Like, get you through to around, I think they've got, off the top of my head, they've got first around 11 by, so... Mm. You know, after round 11, you could bring in a Cox for him or someone like that.
Yeah, but I could certainly see him scoring 130 across 3 weeks. And then by that stage, you're well behind the pack.
Anyway, it's just a thought. And the other thing with that is, I was thinking about this, trying to get my head around it. The extra money you get from not having a second ruck, but having Giles, as long as there's a fourth ruck option, which I think we're going to talk about in a second, a possibility, I could see that. Instead of thinking about it, who could I have in this ruck? It's like, where else would I have this rookie? So will Giles outscore another rookie who I would have to start somewhere else?
Yep. Very good point. All right, we will get on to this West Coast Port game. So just before we get on to the play you're referring to there, on the West Coast side, we had the news out this week that Josh J. Kennedy has plantar fasciitis and is out for... what sounds like an indefinite period. I mean, I don't think they're necessarily talking about long term at this stage, but plantar fasciitis is not a very nice injury to have for a tall player, especially because, of course, you know, being a centre half forward as he is, he needs to be able to get off the line and have a quick acceleration to the ball, and just like a bit like a running back, you need your feet. There's no getting around that. Those guys put a lot of stress on their feet more than even the smaller running players, and it's not a very good injury for a centre half forward. So the question is, Fraser McGuinness, who's shown a fair bit in the preseason. I think obviously we didn't see that game, but I think in the first round of the NAB Cup, I liked his presentation of the ball. He looked like a similar player to Kennedy. Obviously, as we keep on saying over the 5+ years of the coach's box, Molly, key position forward, especially rookies, can often be fantasy poison, but as a ninth forward, there can be a case to be made for McGuinness, possibly just a Supercoach play, but I can see a case for that, especially if we hear that Kennedy's going to be down for a fair while, because I don't think Quinton Lynch has done a whole lot in pre-season, and the Eagles might be looking for McGuinness. I mean, they had excellent returns from Darling last year. They might look at McGuinness as well.
Possibly, yeah, definitely. And it would be just interesting to see how they go with that, looking for a small forward and a tall forward if Kennedy doesn't come up. Whether they'll look to a few of the guys they've already got, because they did have quite a large forward line in the past. So whether they decide to go a little bit smaller or not. You know, McGuinness has put up some good numbers, so... I think we get to see them in the next few weeks, and there's a fair chance we'll get to see them in the grand final version of the NAB Cup. So hopefully we'll get a chance to see if he can do it under a little bit more pressure and more like the proper rules.
Yes, I'm certainly going to be keeping an eye on him, as I'm sure many fantasy coaches will. Now, on the Port side, very good numbers from Jared Redden. And, of course, there was a bit made about the fact that Redden was rucking against Dean Cox in this game. But I can tell you from some of the reports that came out, I mean, spotty as they were, apparently Dean Cox didn't spend a whole lot of time in the ruck. Redden was pretty much rucking against 5 foot or 6 footers. For a fair part of the game, Cox spent a lot of time forward, so I would certainly discount these numbers, and I don't like him as a fourth ruck. I don't like him at all, pretty much this season. I think he's going to be a decent backup to Lobie, but second ruck, I can't stomach a second ruck in my side this year, Molly. I don't think I'm ever going to be able to stomach that, especially with the subs rule being the way it is and the way it's probably going to be going in the future. Second rucks are just... I can't see anything more than, 30s and 40s out of a player like Redden in the real stuff.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's an interesting report. I like his six tackles. That's sort of positive. But as you say, he's obviously his price, his score has been exaggerated with 25 hitouts and four free kicks, which you'd think some of them would be for rucking infringements.
Yep.
That does put a dampener on it, and didn't like to kick the ball at all. So that is a worry. And just to back up the idea that he didn't ruck against much, I mean, apart from Cox's 13 hitouts, it was virtually no one else have one, if the stats are correct.
Yeah, I mean, they didn't go into the match with another recognised ruckman, so obviously they were resting. Nat New was busy, I believe, at a basketball game doing something or other. He was doing some sort of calisthenics. Did you see that, the video
dunking,
of that?
I'm sure that was
club approved, though, the exercises he was doing. He was jumping over a bloke or something along those lines. All right, on to the Collingwood Melbourne game, Ollie. Now, there was an excellent dissection of the Nathan Buckley modifications to the Collingwood game plan on AFL Insider last night. David King spent a fair few minutes going through the fact that Buckley has changed the Collingwood game style from going around the boundary to getting towards about half back and then turning inboard and going through the corridor, which is obviously a high-risk strategy compared to what the Pies had been doing and had got to the grand finals doing, which was to hug the boundary. So I think they showed some footage of particularly Scott Pendlebury. He got the ball in the half-back flank and immediately looked to the point of the square rather than down the line, which is obviously a big change in mindset from what the Pies had been doing. And, of course, the question came up in that analysis that obviously Jason Dunstall and Alistair Lynch were doing with David King about, well, I mean, it's all very well when Scott Pendlebury's got the ball in his hands because he's a great user of the ball and he was able to find a target, you know, off a sixpence. But the problem is, if you've got Simon Buckley or Peter Yagmore or Marty Clark with the ball in their hands, can you actually trust them to actually execute on that game plan? And are they going to be moving midfielders into that back line? I mean, they tried Dale Thomas back flank, and he got absolutely pantsed by Ricky Pettit on a couple of occasions. So I don't know whether that was necessarily a plan for them to see how they can get better users of the ball on that half back line, you know, as opposed to allowing the likes of Buckley, Yagmore and Clark to actually run the ball out of defence and make those decisions with the ball in hand. But if so, then, I mean, Dale Thomas certainly showed them that was they're robbing Peter the pay Paul on that one. But Buckley, I don't think, is necessarily a Supercoach superstar. His you know, quality of disposal is not all that great. Obviously, with Yagmore and Clark, well, I mean, Clark's a bit of an unknown quantity at this stage. Obviously, he's been out of the game for, you know, he only played a few minutes of that game on the weekend, and that was his first AFL game for 2 years. Yagmore, of course, a young bloke, so that's one of the problems they identified with the Buckley game style is if you're trying to turn from the halfback flank inboard, you need to have players with excellent disposal skills, and I'm not sure those three actually qualify are actually going to be able to succeed at that game style. It's actually a big hole in the Buckley plan, Molly. So I mean, do you see this as you see this blowing up in Buckley's face and you know, Malthouse sort of sitting back and saying, I told you so? Or do you think one of those three, if not all three of them, can actually make good on the Buckley game style?
No, I mean, I think that's a real risk. I saw that on AFL Insider last night, and you could see what they were getting at it, the turnovers being very costly, especially with this pressing play. Melbourne were playing a long kicking game, so that sort of put a lot of pressure on the opposition when they lost the ball. So, you know, I think it is going to be a concern, but, you know, they're not... those guys are going to, you know, I'm not sure there's roles in the side for them anyway. Maybe Clark is being looked at. He seems to have a good relationship with Buckley, and we haven't really seen him yet, but the other two, you know, it's going to be doubtful they get a game, I think, although some are talking up Yagmore. But, yeah, I think they're going to struggle to get a game. So, you know, tricky in their fantasy relevance.
Could you see any of the Collingwood midfielders moving into defence, obviously like Davis did from the forward line? Can you see any of them being shifted in there? I don't know, maybe a... Well, it's a bit hard to see Luke Ball playing a halfback flank, yeah. But I mean...
No, not really.
No. Well, possibly Ben Johnson, but I believe he's injured at the moment, isn't he?
Well, he's injured. He's got a sort of...
He'd be the man if he was fit. Yeah. I mean, to actually play that halfback flank role. But
yeah, I mean, it might affect how Heath Shaw plays. You know, there was some hope he'd play more wing, but that might not happen.
Mm. All right, and to round out the discussion on Collingwood, we need to talk about a player who hasn't played this year, and that is Dane Beams. Now, if you look through the Collingwood fan forums, there's a bunch of threads. So there's one on Nick's, I believe, and there's also one on Lully Street Dash. With the fans saying, "Where's Dane Beams? We haven't seen him. Not only we haven't seen him in the NAB Cup, we haven't seen him in training. He's not even in the recovery group. Where is he?" And of course, you know, the only place we've seen him is in court, of course, to give evidence in the rape trial of one of his mates. There was obviously one. I think it was a hearing in the last week of February. So the fact that he's not even on the training track, Molly, that suggests to me that it's either, you know, in his head, or whatever it is that's troubling him, or it's something really chronic. So, I mean, you know, something which is obviously affecting his ability to even run. So, I mean, I've had him in my side, and I noticed this, and I thought, well, I mean, if he doesn't play NAB Cup, and he's not even named this week. I mean, they released the sides for, I think, the Adelaide, Collingwood are playing at Adelaide on Friday night. He's not even in that side. Even if he plays the last week, I don't think we can pick him on 1 week of NAB, can we?
No, and I was very much like you. I liked him as a forward, so I had him in my side, but took him out when, you know, he's not been seen in the NAB Cup. So I can't see, you know, him being a good pick without actually playing some more games.
Mm. It's a mystery. And the media doesn't seem to have picked on it, but yeah, it'd be interesting to see how that plays out. But I don't know, maybe the rumours weren't about Dane Swan. I take that back. That's a terrible thing to
yes,
say about
please
that.
Do.
Anyway. All right, on the running quickly away from that, let's go to the Melbourne side, Molly. And look, someone who, if you don't like Dane Beams and you've got him out of your side, someone you could go sideways to is Colin Sylvia, who, again, I think seems to be forgotten about a little bit with the excitement with all these midfielders going into reclassified as dual position centres and forwards. Well, that's what Colin Sylvia did a year ago, and you know some of us liked him back then, but we see it seems to have been forgotten in the hype over Beams and Sidebottom and Lewis and Zaharakis and all these players. So I mean, do you think Sylvie is being unfairly overlooked in these? Because, I mean, if you look at the Melbourne side, who would you tag there? I think you'd tag Trengove, and I don't think you'd necessarily tag Sylvia because I'm not sure he's got that much hurt factor.
Yeah. I think the worry with him is the brain fades and the go-missings and all those sort of things where, you know, he's not a reliable player, you know. I brought him in late last year and was burnt. You know, I believe he's still got a suspension at the start of the year, round one or round two.
So that might be the reason why.
Yeah, so I think he got put on a lot of...
It's actually only round one next year, not two.
Right, so I think he got put on a lot of will-not-pick lists from some of his behaviours last year with the suspension and the likes.
Mm. And the fact that he wears a beret. Not to be underestimated.
I cannot confirm or deny that.
No, no. So. Well, there's been pictures. He turned up at that stop work meeting. Remember the AFLPA last year? We had that big meeting.
Now we will miss that this year.
Yes. Terrible. All right. Another game that... Well, actually, no. Some people did see this game because it was actually posted on YouTube. I know you're all over the YouTube live.
I heard late. I think my son said that someone put one of these games up.
Well, believe it or not, the entire three-hour archive is viewable on YouTube if you want to subject yourself to that. I'm personally not of that sort of masochistic mindset, but if you
love your Adelaide.
No, I don't actually.
You still miss Craigie and his crowbots, don't you?
No, I don't. Speaking of crowbots, Patrick Dangerfield was everywhere in this game. Played. Now, of course, we didn't have Scott Thompson or Nathan Van Berlo or Boonie Vince. I don't believe was in that game either. So
Vince was there.
Was he there? Oh, there was another one.
He pretended to be there.
There was another one who was missing, though, out of that midfield, though. I can't remember who it was.
Filipek?
No, that's he plays for Port. There was another one missing. I can't remember who it was. But, yes, in terms of their engine room, there were three big names missing. So I'm not sure we can take a whole lot out of this. And they were playing the... it wasn't even the Lions. It was basically a Lion skeleton that was... It was an animated skeleton of a Lion who was actually playing out of... the Crow... The Lions are often poor away, but they were even poorer in that game. It was another training drill, even worse than the Hawks Giants game, unfortunately.
Did a training wreck?
Yes. So, I don't trust that number that Dangerfield put up in that game, and similarly, I don't trust Jason Torpleasure's number. And I think the issue with both of these players, Molly, is that neither of them have actually ever put up premium numbers. I don't trust either of these players to put up anything like premium numbers this year. I think they're still. I mean, under a new coach, of course, everything changes, but I don't think it changes Dangerfield's lack of. Outside work. He's just too inside and doesn't work hard enough to get the cheap stuff outside. And Torpleasure, I think I might have mentioned a couple of weeks ago, can't kick as well as he used to. And obviously he's got all these previous injury concerns, and you know could have bits of his body snap like twigs at the snap of a hat. I think I've mixed about three metaphors in that one, but I don't like Dangerfield or Torpleasure to get anywhere near premium numbers, Molly. That's my contention.
It's a tough one. I mean, I don't like Torpleasure because I don't like. I mean, I do. I love Torpleasure as a player, but I don't like him as a fantasy player due to his injury concerns.
Mm.
Dangerfield is really. He is one of those guys that is an enigma. You know, one year he's going to break out.
Now, the analogy I've heard this week with Dangerfield is that he's had the same trajectory in his career as Gary Ablett Jr. Now, do you believe that? Do you believe that there's going to be some point where he turns the switch and becomes Gary Ablett Jr.?
Well, I mean, I don't know whether he's going to become Gary Ablett Jr., but I think the theory that he's going to go from a flashy guy who plays forward into a midfielder who gets a lot of the ball, I think that's a fair enough analogy.
I think part of the analogy was that the players at Geelong took Gary Ablett aside at one point and said, mate, you've got to... train harder. You've got to, you know, get your body right, and you know, train as hard as an elite midfielder. Now, I'm not sure whether the Crows leadership group have taken him in and you know put him on the chair in the middle and told him the same thing, but maybe that'll leak out. But if they have, I'm not sure Dangerfield is actually capable of becoming that sort of 100 every week fantasy player. That obviously Ablett evolved into.
Yeah, it's going to be tough. But, I mean, if you look at the history, I mean, Ablett went, you know, ignoring his senior, his rookie year, he went 68, 68, 76, 77, and then jumped up to 98. So, I mean, the question is, you know, did we really see that coming? And I don't think we did. I don't think anyone really saw the Ablett jump coming. So the question is, do you believe Dangerfield will have that jump at some point? And if you do you think it's this year? Is there something that we see that can see him jump? And, I mean, at the end of last year, he did put in some more consistently better scores under the new coach. So, you know, I don't... It's one of those mid-price picks that you would be picking with a bit of risk. But I think there is some reward to be had there. I think he can potentially average 90 to 95 for a season if, you know, all goes well for him, and you know he's done the hard work off the on the track this year. So, you know, I think he's, I personally have him in my side right today, and as you say, I may have been seduced by the performance on the weekend. So, you know, I guess there's still 2 weeks to see how he goes, and they're another team that's a chance to play off in the final. So hopefully we'll get to see him strut his stuff at some point.
I mean, if there was a theme to the footy media this week, it was that, okay, we've had 2 weeks of data on these new coaches, and we've now figured out how they're going to play. So obviously people have figured out Buckley's going to go through the guts. They figured out that Neild with Melbourne is going to go around the boundary line. And they seem to have figured out, I mean, although I'm not sure we've seen a whole lot of it, certainly didn't see it in that game against the Lions, because that was not a highly structured game, I don't think. I'm not sure we saw it necessarily against Port, but the consensus on Adelaide with the Brenton Sanderson, of course, is just come from Geelong last year, is that he's going to make them play like Geelong. So they're going to build up their bodies, and they're going to boss the corridor, which is obviously what Geelong have tried to do. Now, I don't believe that they can just click their fingers and do that. I think they're going to need not just one pre-season. They're going to need a couple of pre-seasons to build up their bodies. And I haven't got any Crows this year, and I don't think any of them are going to be worthwhile for fantasy this year. Because, I mean, obviously, Scott Thompson, but I mean, that goes without saying. But, I mean, I don't even like Sam Jacobs. I mean, but... Yeah, apart from Scott Thompson, who was a given, I don't like any of these guys for fantasy this year, because I think they're going to be a team in transition, and it's going to, I mean, with Buckley, you can actually snap your fingers and say, right, boys, kick it in the centre, and then, I mean, those guys are so well drilled that they'll be able to do it. But with Sanderson, it's not necessarily just a sense of right, boys, let's handball through the centre and boss our way through. I mean, you can't do it with thin bodies, and the Crows have been. Had many Neil Craig pre-seasons in them, where they rode bicycles for apparently the whole pre-season. So to build their bodies up to execute the Geelong game plan is going to take more than one season, I think. But anyway, that's just my opinion. All right. On the Lions side of that game, Molly, Mitchell Golby was the one who topped the numbers. I'm not quite sure. I mean, Pierce Hanley. I was talked out of Pierce Hanley early last season by a certain bloke who shall remain nameless, Tarquin. I'm hoping if Golby gets the game, you're going to have Golby on one and a half back flank and Pierce Hanley on the other. Obviously, with Josh Drummond, as is usual, injured. I'm hoping that I'm hoping, if not assuming, that Golby and Hanley can work together. I think, obviously, Hanley wasn't in that game, but those out there, and there are some, who are relying on Hanley improving again this year and, you know, up to keeper status from the 80s he delivered last year. I don't think necessarily that Golby getting 100 is a bad sign for Hanley. I think he probably would take a back seat to Hanley if Hanley was there. Do you disagree with any of that, Molly? I mean, that was another one of the themes of this week, is that no one knows what Brisbane is about. Possibly even with the inclusion of Michael Voss, no one knows what their game plan is. I think one of their game plans is to get the ball in quickly, so they need to get it in the hands of their halfback flankers and get them to run and carry and deliver. And that means getting the ball into the hands of Hanley and Golby. So I think there's value in both of them. And it's not necessarily that one's going to, steal numbers off the other one. So do you agree with me there, or do you think it is a zero-sum game on that one?
I haven't really seen enough of them to comment, but, yeah, I mean, it's absolutely possible that, you know, those guys are going to be the ones who move it. I mean... Drummond is a guy who would do it if he gets on the park, but that's a huge if. And the other guy who sometimes does it is, his name escapes me, Adcock. So he's been needed to play other roles over the time. So I think that, you know, they may look to some new guys to step up and try and, you know, help out with that delivery. So that's an absolute possibility.
That's an interesting point you raise, that the rise of not only Hanley from last year, but also Golby might mean that Adcock, who of course dabbled last year with moves into the midfield, might actually move in there permanently. That's an interesting prospect. But of course, you know, we've been burnt last year by some other. Well, actually, we'll talk about them, you know, in a minute. A couple other backs who were supposedly in the same vein, but have let us down. Now, and finally, before we get off that game, Molly, I know you said you had Leuenberger in your side, but are you not worried by Leuenberger playing a half for 14 Dream Team points with 14 hit-outs?
Oh, well, yes. You'd be lying if you didn't say you weren't worried. You had a fair run in the first week, so I think it's early. I think he's working into it, so definitely there is some worry, but, yeah, we'll just keep an eye out on him and see whether he starts to really play in the next few weeks.
All right, that's cool. Okay, we'll move on to the Dogs and Blues game, and Molly, I was salivating. I don't know if you did you see this game? I was just drooling.
No.
I was drooling all over my keyboard. It was on my. I had to wipe it down. It was just so slutty. Now look, perhaps we should think up another word for that, because it's not really a very nice word.
It's not family friendly, is it?
No, we probably should think up another. Well, perhaps we can ask the audience in the chat there. What word should we use for what Brian Lake and Ryan Hargrave were doing? It was so beautiful. It was so productive. It was just music to the mouths of fantasy coaches, what they were doing, which of course was chipping across the back line. And this is, I mean, I guess the question, Molly, is can you have both Ryan Hargrave, Juicy is one that Heavy is mentioning. So Ryan Hargrave and Brian Lake, can you have both of them? And do you need, I mean, do we need to load up on Dogs this year? Because there's just so much potential for them to turn into the new Hawthorn. Obviously, there was a couple of games last year. I think it was the Melbourne one, and there was another one where they spent entire quarters chipping around across the centre line, while every other player, players like Suckling and Birchall, just basically kicked to each other while they waited for someone to come open in the forward line, and they did that for an entire quarter. The repeat inside 50s were insane. I could see the Dogs doing that this year, especially to a couple of the lesser clubs. I believe they have the Suns. Now, was it the Giants in round 5 and the Suns in round 8, or the other way around? I could see, Brian Lake has form. I could see either Hargrave or Lake putting up another 170, which of course is, I think that was the high point of Lake's year, the year he averaged 90 odd. I could see both of those guys being top 7, if not top 3, because, I just don't want to miss out on when one of those guys just goes off completely, gets plus 30 in 3 minutes. I can just see it was just so juicy and, you know, gluttonous. The tab says orchestral. I don't know about that, but gluttonous. It was just so gluttonous, Molly.
Yeah, no, I think there can be a lot of teams that we'll see with both those guys. I believe, as I think you said earlier, that the idea of a heavy mid-priced backline is a real definite possibility. I know I've got a few. I don't have any rookies starting in my back line at present. Now, I've put some rookies elsewhere, but I think these guys, as I said to you, I think it's possible to pick a back line that isn't going to cost you the earth and could average, 80 or 90 for everyone in it. So I think both of these guys need to be really watched and assuming there's no more injury concerns, you could go in with both of them into the season.
I could certainly see, of course, the Dogs have round 11 buys. I could see loading up on Dogs for the second half of the season. Boyd, previously I would not ever pick Higgins, but I could see GNC, Syracuse, possibly, and even Higgins in my side after the buys, because those dogs are just going to be... I mean, Gian Siracusa are probably more than Higgins. I could see him zoning back up to the half back line to get to join in those soft kicks. Bob Murphy even is a nice little possibility. Especially, I believe he's now is he back and forward eligible this year? I'm not sure he is. I think he might just be a back, but I could see Hargrave, Lake, and Murphy all contending for that top seven, assuming of course that they manage to find someone to take the second small forward, which of course is the big issue on the weekend with Eddie Betts. Easton Wood does a decent job. Dylan Addison, maybe not. But I think the jury is in on Bob Murphy as a lockdown small defender, and I think the Addison is going to have to cover for Morris, of course, while he's out. So that's a bit of an issue at the Dogs. But I mean, that's not a fantasy issue. I mean, it doesn't really matter if whoever Addison and Wood play on scores goals, if as long as Murphy is released. And I could see, I could see so many points from just cheap chipping stuff in across the half back line all the way through the season. And I mean, we can't really do it in the first half of the season, of course, because of the bye situation, because they are all round 11 bye players. But yeah, certainly for the second half of the season. But I mean, it is so tempting because the Dogs have such a nice draw in the first 11. I think the first eight, they play two sides who played finals last year. Well, actually, it might be the first nine. So, yeah, it is going to be tempting to load up on Dogs in the first half of the year, but certainly in the second half of the year, I can see a lot of people doing so.
Yeah. No, I can't argue with that. I think, yeah, I mean, the problem is, I mean, with that idea is that you really want to be on Hargrave and Lake at the start of the year if you're going to be, because they're so lowly priced for what they've done in the past.
Mm.
You know, they are bargains of the highest order, assuming they can stay fit.
Heavy on the chat's telling me to calm down. I'm on a sugar rush. It's just a points rush. It was just great. It's great anyway. All right. The Dogs were playing on the weekend, Molly, a team that we were getting excited about for similar reasons last year, because at this point, you know, it was Carlton who was you know, leading the DT scoring in the NAB. I think this time last year in the round two, I think they played. Was it Port? I think at Docklands, and they just smashed the numbers out in that game. It was actually the Dogs who, I mean, in the first round of the NAB, the Dogs had the two of the top three scoring games in Dream Team, and they increased their averages in the both halves of that game. I think they averaged well over 750 DT points per half, which is much better than the average for the rest of the teams. But I suppose we need to talk about, of course, the Jeremy Laidlaw injury. He's going to be out for, I think it was up to six weeks. So there's a spot there in that back line. And, of course, the major fantasy relevant player, as, of course, we talked about after Carlton's last game, was Paul Bower. But unfortunately, for those people who are Paul Bower fans, and I am one of them, Carlton fans are not fans of Paul Bower. I've been going through the forums this week, and they hate him with a passion. Him and Carrazzo, for some reason, they also seem to hate Carrazzo.
I think they think he turns it over too much, Carrazzo.
Yes, and Paul Bower, they just don't think he's a defender at all. So, I mean, I know Brett Thornton was the one who Will Minson, you know, left his an imprint of his patella in his back. To take that big screamer. But look, unfortunately, I think, as far as Paul Bower is concerned, I think actually it's going to be Thornton, if they are going to put someone back in, it's going to be Thornton who gets in there. And I don't like Paul Bower's job security at all, unfortunately.
No, I don't. I mean, I had him 1 year and he burnt me, so I'm one of those guys who just can't stomach the idea of having him again. So... But, I mean, he had a huge drop-off last year with injury and the like. So, you know, there's a chance he could return back and be a cash cow. I don't think he's going to be premium or top seven, but definitely he could earn you some money. But it's a pretty big risk, I think.
Mm, yes. Sadly, I mean, I like him as a player, and I like him, especially like him as a fantasy player, because he has shown high willingness to be to be gluttonous, as Arxel on the chat pointed out. That's an excellent word. I shall use it in future. But yes, unfortunately, just his job security is not good enough. All right, on to the final game of the week, Molly, and of course that was Frio against Richmond. Now, I think we went through your team at the start of the in the pre-show. You had one of these players. I mean, I had both. You had both, Paul Duffield and Greg Broughton. Now, this is again a bit like with the two Hawthorn players we talked about, Suckling and Birchall. I feel like fantasy coaches are more forgiving of Duffield and Broughton, even though, you know, as Wins was saying on the chat there before. Are you not a Burns victim of Duffield and or Broughton? I feel like there's way too many coaches who are previous Burns victims, but they want to go in again. They want to put their hand in the fire. Now, what is the deal here? I mean, I know these guys rotate through midfield, but they rotate through midfield. They're not permanent midfielders. I mean, I know it does sound like Barlow's not going to be playing round one, so there's going to be a spot available. But I can't trust Broughton or Duffield to play midfield any particular week because they tend to rotate through there. They might play one game and get 120 and then go to the back line and get a 50. I just can't trust their numbers, Molly. I can't trust their standard deviation.
Yeah, no, there's some truth to that. I think Broughton... Greg.
Greg, yes. Greg,
Mr. B. He's shown, I think during the preseason, from what I've heard, he's played a bit in the midfield and scored very well. So that's what I like about him. He turned it around towards the end of last year when Harvey was given the boot. He wasn't given the boot, but he changed things around. So I like that about him. I think he could turn it on again this year. And Duffield, you know, he had a bad year last year. I think the fact that, you know, Ross Lyon.
Yep.
Has shown the propensity to have backmen who do score very well. I'm hoping he'll play, you know, he'll look to have that loose man and it'll be Duffield, a bit like, from the Saints.
Fisher, you're talking about Fisher.
Fisher, yeah, yep. He'll play the Fisher role. So yeah. I guess that's where I'm coming from with that at the moment. And you know, it's still 3 weeks out from the season. Everything could change by then.
Mm. Yeah, I wouldn't trust either of them personally. But I mean, having said that, I may do so given the buy situation in the second half of the year. But I don't think I can trust them to start off the season. I think I'd like to see a half a season out of them. Maybe I'll trust them for 11 games towards the end of the season, but perhaps not at this stage. Also in that game from Frio, Molly, a couple of rookie price players, Josh Mellington. Now, my take on Josh Mellington is I think he's not a natural fantasy player. I think he's a sort of a five possessions for two goals, sort of Matthew Campbell type. Are you with me there, or do you think he actually can accumulate? Because obviously his numbers are not Lockie Neal types, but I tend to think Neal's a little bit that way as well. So do these guys play too deep forward, or can they score enough playing across half forward to justify picking them?
I wouldn't write him off, but I'm not sure that he's done enough to jump off the page at us just yet. You know, I did see what the little bits that I saw of this game, he did look good, but yeah, whether he can turn it on and whether he's going to hold on to that spot, they've got a lot of good young players. They've got players to come back this year, so I'm not sure that he's one I would have a whole lot of confidence in.
Mm. Severian on the chat reminds us, Ree, Duffield and Broughton, that Pab is going to be out of the midfield this season, so he also needs replacing. So yes, there's certainly some replacement of players. And if Duffield and Broughton are going to move into midfield, then theoretically there's also a spot available on that half-back line. And Lee Spur, although we didn't see a whole lot of him in the first round of the NAB, we saw a half out of him. And again, you know, with the proviso, of course, and he did only play a half a game. So even though he is mature age, you know, we can't necessarily trust that he's got the engine to play out a full game and, you know, and turn that 50 to 100. But you know that he did show in that game, I think, that he can accumulate. And if they're looking for a halfback rebounder, then he can do the job. But unfortunately, I think, Molly, they're not actually looking for a halfback rebounder. They've got about 15 of those in the side already. What they're looking for is the next Roger Hayden, and they haven't got one. So I'm not sure Spur is all that necessary in that round one side, Molly.
No, I don't think so. I think, as I said, they've got a lot of young players. There's got some to come back, and you know, apart from the fact they've been injury cursed in the past, I think you know, he's not a good option.
Yeah, I mean, look, I mean, people wonder why Freo has still got Ryan Crowley on their list. I mean, maybe Crowley needs to go to the back line and be the Roger Hayden type. I mean, you can't replace a bloke like Roger Hayden. You need to have. Yeah, that is the one. The one big problem with Freo's list at the moment is they haven't found a replacement for Hayden, and they've got too many outside back flankers and not enough lockdown back pockets. Unfortunately, yeah. I'm not sure Lee Spur is the answer to that problem.
Did you ever really think you were going to be complaining that Fremantle can't find a replacement for Roger Hayden?
Well, Hayden was a good player.
He's a good player. I like
him. He was a good player, and he did a job. And look, he was quality. I mean, the problem with Hayden, of course, was that he couldn't stay in the park. So that was always a problem. All right. On the Richmond side of that game, I think the Richmond have found a lockdown back pocket, and that is Stephen Morris. But I guess that's another question: is at this point, what do Richmond need? Do they need Stephen Morris as a lockdown defender who will sit on a small forward? Or do they need Brandon Ellis, who is, again, another halfback flank, you know, outside accumulator? I think that back six for Richmond, they've also got Newman there, who's obviously an excellent distributor. And they haven't got... Well, they have got Conker, of course, because he's going to be returning after his long suspension during the NAB Cup. But and they've got Hooley and... You could throw in, oh, I don't know. Well, Daniel Connors is a forward, isn't he? But obviously, Deledio is the other major distributor off that half back line. Weberly seems to be playing a wing role rather than a half back line. But for me, I think they actually need a back pocket more than they need a half back flanker, and thus it might actually be Morris who plays instead of Ellis, Molly.
Yeah, it's going to be a bit of a flip of a coin, that one, to see how. Which one gets the final gig and you know, then to work out, is there better options available? But, you know, they both have looked okay. Saw them the first week. They both did a few good things. So, you know, either one of them could lock down their spot in the side.
I mean, if you look at that Richmond list and you think, who is their lockdown back pocket? I mean, last year it was Mitch Farmer. And I think Morris deserves a go in ahead of a bloke like Mitch Farmer. I don't believe he's played pre-season. I'm not sure if he's injured, but I think Morris certainly is an option for the Richmond selection committee. But I'm not sure he's the accumulator. I'm not sure he's actually going to get a whole lot of ball in that back line. So it may end up, even though a lot of fantasy coaches have got a spot in their fantasy back line, even if it's only on the bench, for one of Ellis and Morris. It might actually end up be that neither of them ends up being all that worthwhile. So that's not something.
Might be Mr. Weberly again.
Yeah, but I mean, well, as I said, Weberly on the. I don't think Weberly's a rookie price though, is he? I think
he's 110.
What, is he really? Well, there you go.
Uh huh.
Well, I'm not sure he's going to keep that spot on the wing though. That'd be the other
no,
issue.
No, that is because that is the concern.
Their wingman would have been last year. Shane Edwards would be on one wing, and the other wing would probably be who would they have had on the other wing? Matt White probably. So I think Weberly would probably still be both behind both of those guys. So job security on all three of those guys a bit dodgy, I would have thought.
We all know you need a good wingman.
Yes. All right. On that note, and I should say just in closing, so that closes out the round review. I did promise last week that there was going to be an article from me on the Raw website, which hasn't eventuated yet, but I'm promised it is going to be happening tomorrow. There was a few negotiations. I'll tell you about it in the after show, Molly.
Very good.
Yes, all right. So, yes, as we had a few technical hitches, but I was thrown by the fact that Molly was on time this week. It was a big shock to all of us. And
to your internet.
And to my internet. Yes. Thank you, Mr. Telstra. All right, that'll be it for us for this week. We shall see you guys next week on the Coach's Box, and possibly. I'm thinking maybe that backs and midfield one that we still haven't done might get done in the week between the NAB Cup Grand Final and Round One. So we'll see if we can fit that in. I might even recruit you to that one, Molly.
We will have that, but then again, there will be that Sydney Greater Western Sydney game that week.
Is that? But the lockouts still won't have happened, will it? So.
True.
Yes. All right. Well, we'll talk about that. But anyway, as I said, we shall see you guys next week on the Coach's Box.
Okay. See you, everyone.